It's now time for Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM. He's here to take your questions regarding law and estate planning at 390-1370. And now, here's attorney Brad Wewell.
All right. Good morning, everybody. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad, and we are here on our second to last Saturday. Yes, this is week 184 that we've been doing Law Talk with Brad, and we have one more week to go after today. So it's been great, and I appreciate everybody who's listened. I appreciate everybody who's called in. But it's time to move on to other things. And so this week we're going to talk about estate taxes and asset protection planning. We've got Doug Paul. Doug?
Good morning, Brad. Good to be back here on Law Talk.
All right. A final farewell here, Doug. Doug is director of advanced planning at the Wewell Law Firm, and Doug does the heavy lifting when it comes to helping our clients with estate tax planning and asset protection planning. So we're going to talk about both those things today. You want to listen up, because there have been big changes in asset protection planning. We anticipate there will be big changes in estate tax planning, so this is a show you want to listen to. And then next week, for our final finale, I guess final finale sounds a little redundant, but our finale, we are going to have Candace Bocock on one last time. And Candace has been the really the backbone of this show and has really done many, many things to make it interesting and make it a positive experience, hopefully, for everybody who's involved in it. But Candace will be here next week, and we're going to talk about whatever we want to talk about because it's our last show. So we'll keep you posted on some things on that, too. This is a call-in show. If you're a regular listener, you certainly know that. And our call-in number is 390-1370, 390-1370. We've got Andy Wewell out there on the phones. Andy's an Eagle Scout. He's a junior in high school. Again, he gets paid to do this show. So let's work Andy over and call him with your questions today. If you've got any kind of question on estate planning, we're happy to hear it today. We're going to talk about estate taxes. We're going to talk about asset protection. But if you've just got a question about anything out there to do with estate planning, you can call this morning. We're happy to take it. We're happy to give you an answer. Again, this is your second to last chance to do it. This is our second to last show. So if you've got an issue out there, you got a question out there, you got a concern out there about a will or a trust, a power of attorney, a living will, something to do with special needs planning and special children, something to do with maybe some charitable planning or business succession issues, call this morning at 390-1370, 390-1370. And if you want to, you can email us. We've got an email address. Our email address is askbrad@wewell.us. That's askbrad@wiewell.us. And if you email us, we'll read your question over the air, and we'll give you an answer, too. So that's the setup. Here's the windup and the pitch, Doug. All right, so we're coming at you. It's baseball playoff season. My St. Louis Cardinals are looking like they're on the ropes.
I was thinking of that just the other day. I wasn't going to mention it, Brad, because I know you bleed Cardinal red.
I do, Doug. I do, and they're up against the feared L.A. Dodgers, but they're back in St. Louis, so we'll see what happens. But there's a lot of things going on outside of baseball, and one of the things that's going on, Doug, is concern about the future of estate taxes. Where are they going? What's going to happen? I notice in front of you that, there is no crystal ball. So we're going to have to use your powers of ESP and prophecy to kind of get us where we're going. So tell our listeners, Doug, what the current state of estate taxes are and what you think, or maybe what commentators think the future holds.
Sure. Right now our current estate taxes, and we have this for the next 80 days through the end of the year, we have a $3.5 million exemption. We have a 45% tax rate. So what that means is that an individual can pass up to $3.5 million tax-free to anyone other than their spouse. They can pass an unlimited amount to their spouse tax-free, which is the current law. It's been that way for almost 30 years. But the tax usually comes at the second death of a married couple or when a single person passes that $3.5 million exemption. Now, that's what we've had all year. This was set in place back almost 8 years ago exactly in October of 2001, or September actually of 2001, when we had some big tax reforms subsequent to September 11th. And so we've been on this course where we've gone for $1 million exemption back in 2001. It kind of slowly ticked up over several years to a $3.5 million exemption.
So it's 3.5 right now. Uh-huh. What's the tax rate right now?
45%. 4.5.
So 45%. Everything over $3.5 million is taxed at 45%.
Exactly.
Right. Married couples, how many exemptions do they get?
Well, unless they do any planning, they're usually going to get just one exemption.
Okay.
Because they'll pass, you know, traditionally you'd pass all of your assets to your spouse. And again, this exemption is only good for passing assets to someone other than your spouse. So you pass all your assets tax-free to your husband or wife. Then at the second of their deaths, then they have all the assets. So they've stacked both halves of the estate on one side of the ledger. That person passes away. And they only have the one exemption. So it's usually a second death tax.
All right. Not good. But $3.5 million is the highest it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something about 80 days.
80 days. Yeah, we're down to 80 days until we don't have an estate tax for exactly 1 year. So it goes away for 1 year. So before you get too excited
So I'm going to keep Granny on life support at least until January 1st.
Exactly. Right. I just imagine, like, you know, January 1st, all of these living wills magically show up that hadn't been able to be found for the last
plugs year. Will be pulled.
That's
and
right.
Yep. All right.
Yeah. The wealthy should have food tasters, I guess. That's what they'd say for there.
Listen up, folks. Listen up. I like to eat, so, you know, and if you want me to come over, of course, I don't necessarily. No, I don't want to get poisoned.
You'd be the
either.
One to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll be the one buying the black bean.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
All right. So, do you think, Doug,
mm-hmm.
that we're going to wake up New Year's Day and not have an estate tax?
You know, I honestly don't think that. You know, I think we'll probably, it is just again, my opinion and from things I've read from national commentators and those kind of things, is that I think we'll probably see an extension of this year's law. So we'll have see the $3.5 million exemption extended to 2010 for the year, the calendar year 2010. So, you know, I don't think we're ever really going to get there. That being said, you know, and people have been saying that we're going to extend the $3.5 million exemption since January. There has been very little action. You know, you mentioned all the action in the baseball playoffs. Well, it's the absolute opposite of what's happened on the estate tax front, where there's been, you know, lots of talk and no action.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's still the case. I think we'll see what people would refer to as a one-year patch, where basically they extend this year's estate tax exemption to 2010 and not let the estate tax go away, and then maybe deal with a permanent change next year. And we'll get into that in just a second. But that's kind of what I think is going to happen over the next just under three months.
All right, so let's summarize that. If nothing changes, we won't have an estate tax next year. You believe, and I believe, that they're going to pass a one-year extension.
Right.
Next year's law will look like this year's law, $3.5 million exemption. Married couples get one exemption per couple unless they do some planning, 45% tax and everything over the exemption.
Exactly.
All right. Now, if they do that, which I think everybody thinks they're going to do that, but who the heck knows, what do the gurus out there, and I'll throw you in the guru basket too here, Doug, what do gurus think is really going to happen in 2011, which is now 1 year and 80 days away?
Right, right. And the issue with 2011 is that, you know, I mentioned all the way back 8 years ago, this whole system was changed with the passage of what we now refer to as the Bush tax cuts. The problem with that was that sunsets. It goes away on December 31
of 2010. So it expires.
Yeah, it expires.
All right.
It's no longer the law. We go back to the way the law was when President Bush took office in 2001. We go back to the law as
President Clinton's
as
law.
Clinton administration had left it, yeah.
Okay.
So functionally what that means is if there's no change, that we'll go back to a $1 million exemption. So go back from today's $3.5 million to a $1 million exemption.
Okay. That's a big change.
And then the one that's actually maybe even a bigger change is that the percentage goes up substantially. The tax rate does. And so it goes from being a rate of 45% to a rate of 55%, highest marginal tax rate of 55%. So it becomes much more onerous if we get to that point. I'm not sure we'll get to that point or not. Okay, and I think if you read what all the pundits and all the gurus say, they're spread across the board. I remember when probably, I guess it was probably about 4 years ago, it seemed like in many circles there was a foregone conclusion that the estate tax was going to be permanently repealed,
Right.
that next year's unlimited exemption with no estate tax was going to really be the future. That's where it was going to be. They were just going to extend from 2010 forward that permanent repeal of the estate tax. It seems unlikely that that'll be the case now.
I think it
It
seems unlikely.
they took a few shots at that 2002, 2005, and 2006. None of those passed. Then the discussion kind of became a discussion of, well, what about a $3.5 million exemption? Because people seem to be comfortable with what the law is today in 2009. Why don't we just make that permanent, get on down the road and deal with health care and income taxes and deficits and wars and everything else that we have to deal with as a country? That didn't happen, and I think more and more we're starting to hear a pushback and say, well, maybe 3.5, maybe that's a little high,
Well, we do have, let's see, I think I've heard that we have a new president.
Something about that. There was something he was talking about. It
Yeah.
started with the C. I can't remember what the what's started with.
Yeah, and then we've got a new Speaker of the House, and
Uh-huh.
we have a new, well, we have an entirely new Congress.
Right.
Don't appear to be, and I'm not trying to be political, but don't appear to be taxpayer friendly at the top of the taxpayer chart.
Right. And I think that's the issue that permanent estate tax reform is facing, is that, we've had this regime change, if you will, over the last several years, both with the 2006 midterm elections, then of course in 2008 with President Obama's election and the election of other congressional and increasing congressional seats with the Democrats. That there is a big movement towards taxing folks at the highest levels of wealth, whether it's income or estates, much higher than we ever had in the past,
Right.
or in the past, recent past, I should say.
Yep. And you went to a program. And by the way, folks, this is a call-in show, and we have a call-in number, 390-1370, 390-1370. If you have a question about this or anything to do with estate planning, if you've got a comment on estate taxes, or again, we're going to talk about asset protection plan in a little while, feel free to give us a call, 390-1370. 390-1370, and we're happy to answer your question or let you spew and spout, and that's just fine today. So 390-1370.
As long as it's about the estate tax, spew and spout about
Yeah, don't
that.
say that. Yeah, leave us.
If you're calling about football or something, we're probably not the best
Well,
guys. You
yeah,
always say
that's
yes.
right. That's
Yeah.
right. All right,
So.
a good point. You went to a program about 3 or 4 weeks ago now. By a national, put on by, I think Frost Bank sponsored it.
Sure.
And they had a guru, Roy Adams, big
Yeah.
dog out of New York City.
Right.
And you came back from that and you were surprised at what he said about the future of the estate tax, or as some people call it, of course, the death tax.
Right.
What's his take?
Sure. And the big surprising thing is that you start to hear people talk about the possibility that we are actually going to wake up in January 1 of 2011. So, not more 1 year and 80 days from now, we'll wake up with an estate tax that is subject that is the $1 million estate tax going back to the old law, the Clinton administration law that we talked about. For years, no one ever thought we'd get to that point. Now we're getting close to the timeline, and it's starting to say, well, maybe that's a real possibility as far as what's going to happen. Particularly given that there's other things that have transpired that have kind of divided the Congress, folks, particularly congressional leaders, that want to see a reduction in income taxes for taxpayers that are paying under $100,000. So there's been a lot of give and take between the estate tax reform folks and these folks that are looking to reduce income taxes in a climate where we need every dollar we can get.
I think we need every dollar we can get, and so we're going to take a call here. We've got Dave on line one. Dave, Brad Wewell, Law Talk with Brad. Thanks for listening. What can we help you with? We got Dave's there, Snoop. Okay. Do we have Deborah in line two? Okay, Dave and Deb, once you hang on a second, we're have a little technical difficulty here, and so stand by. And as soon as we get it resolved,
we'll get you right on the air.
Doug, it seemed like you were telling me that the amount of money they would raise from $1 million exemption.
Right, that's a good point.
Pay what?
Right, there was a discussion in that the Roy Adams discussion that you were mentioning, that the amount of money that would be raised by keeping the estate tax at a $1 million level, which is what it would default to, would fund Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security, from 2011 going forward to 2020 in their projections.
Wow.
So that's you're talking about a substantial sum in a time where as a country, we're hurting for revenue.
Oh, man. You know. Yeah, we are hurting for revenue. There's no question about that. Okay, I think what we're going to do, and Dave and Deborah, again, if you'll hang on, we're going to take a break. When we come back from our break, we're going to try to get you on and get your questions or comments going, and then we're going to continue our discussion about estate taxes and asset protection planning. So, Dave and Deborah, if you will hold on, we'll get to you as soon as we can, and we're going to take a break and come back right after the break. This is Law Talk with Brad.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment on Talk Radio 1370 AM. Welcome back to Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
All right, welcome back. This is Law Talk with Brad. This is Brad Wewell. We've got Doug Paul here. We're talking about state taxes. We're talking about other stuff. It looks like we got a call on line one. Is Dave still there? Dave.
Hello.
Hi, Dave. Brad Wewell. Thanks for waiting, and we can
Short. I've got a guy coming here to replace my windshield right now.
All right. Well, tell me what your question is.
Shows up hour late. Okay. Talking about the spousal exemption on estate tax, that doesn't go for foreign wives. You got a lot of people in this area who are not, who got green cards, but have not at all been naturalized citizens, and it's zero.
Yeah, well, it's the way it works is
Q dots.
There you go. It's not exactly zero. Doug, why don't you explain how things work with non-citizen spouses?
Okay, I'm going to have to get off the phone, but basically I know quite a bit about this because I've been in the same damn situation because I've got to deal with German estate taxes or U.S.
Right.
I'll get off and listen on the air.
Okay, sounds great, and we appreciate your call.
Right. Well, first let's deal with one of the issues that people often run into, which is the gifting to non-citizen spouses. People that run into an issue with that. If you make a gift to a non-citizen spouse, you don't have an unlimited marital deduction for that, which you would have for U.S. spouses. For non-citizen spouses, you're going to run it currently this year, $133,000 is the maximum amount you can gift in a given year. At death, it works a little differently. At death, you still have your exemption, the amount that we talked about, the $3.5 million, so that would still apply to a transfer to a non-citizen spouse. But you don't get the unlimited amount unless you use some particular planning techniques, which is our caller, Dave, alluded to, called a QDOT, which is a type of trust that requires a U.S. trustee. That would allow for that exemption, for the unlimited exemption. Basically, what the concern is if we allow unlimited exemptions to non-citizen spouses and then go back home, then that money has never been taxed in the U.S. Transfer tax system. So that's why they have the setup that it is. So it's not automatic that you have the unlimited marital deduction for a non-citizen spouse. Like Dave mentioned, that is correct. There are some ways you can do that with the use of some other planning techniques.
Okay, so non-citizen spouses have issues, and you know they're going to be more pronounced again if we end up with $1 million exemption too. So let's go to Deborah in line two. Deborah, Brand, Wewell, thanks for listening. Thanks for waiting, by the way. What can we help you with this morning?
Yes, okay. I can barely hear you.
Okay.
We
can hear you just fine.
Okay, good. My husband is in his late 50s, and he's recently become 100% disabled.
Okay.
We're unsure of recovery right now.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That's a tough deal, too.
Thank you. I'm just needing to rework all of our wills and everything, and I just would like some guidance on what direction I might or what kind of documents I would need, A, to provide for him, B, to protect our assets, and pass them on to our children and,
sure.
you know, just and for long-term care for him, which is, you know, in his 50s, it's probably going to be, if something should happen to me.
Sure.
Right. Let me ask a quick question on that, okay. too. Is the nature of his disability physical or mental?
Both.
Okay. Both. Does he still, can he still understand legal documents?
It depends on how complicated the transaction is.
Okay.
Yes, at times he can.
Good
he
days, bad days, good days.
He was in the legal profession.
Okay.
So he's got some stuff on, you know, automatic pilot.
Right.
Right. Well, you know, you're calling a good time to consider these issues because you have a lot of things that will potentially change.
Brad, I can't hear y'all at all.
Okay. Right. You have a lot of things that will potentially change with the situation that you have with your husband. So a couple issues just to be aware of, and we'll speak in generalities because I'm not sure of what your husband's specific situation is. But, you know, we have the issue with any type of public benefits that he may be entitled to or may be receiving. The qualification for some of those benefits are needs-based, and some of them are not needs-based. So you have to be careful to understand what type of programs he would be looking at. That's going to be important in your situation because, you know, in your planning, if you pass away and you want to provide as best you can for him, for your assets to take care of him, depending on what type of programs he may or, you know, be eligible for or may be receiving, that may dictate the structure and the nature of how you leave the money to him, how you leave your assets to him, because if he is on any kind of needs-based programs, then that would require particular types of trust planning generally to protect those assets for his benefit. And y'all have children?
Yes.
And for your children's benefit.
How old are your children, Deborah? Are they adults?
They're in their mid-20s.
Okay, great.
So they're adults.
Good. Yeah, what Doug is kind of saying is, too, is that planning for you and planning for him are two different things right now. That planning for you, if something happens to him, well, you're, again, relatively healthy. You sound, comparable age probably. And, you know, you're going to be okay in the long run. Maybe not the really, really long run, but there's a lot of things that you can do on a normal planning thing. But if something does happen to you and you leave assets to him and those assets are going to eventually be dwindled down because of just the cost of his care going forward, then there may be some special planning that we put in place for you that if you don't cooperate, you die first in some car wreck or some other calamity, that the money you leave him can be available to him but won't necessarily disqualify him for a lot of the government benefits that may be out there later for him that he's going to need to access, because my guess is his care is going to get more and more expensive as time marches on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does this help at all?
Well, I was hoping for something more specific, but
let's just get more specific. You can do a new will and with powers of attorney, right, Doug?
Correct.
And you could maybe consider a revocable living trust as a way of making sure somebody else can manage it for him if he can't. A lot of it, Deborah, is going to depend on your financial situation and really the amount of the size of your estate. If it's, you got a large estate, well, that's we're not going to have to probably consider much Medicaid planning. Would you say,
right,
Doug?
Right.
In which case, a revocable living trust would be probably the document of choice because it's just going to be more stable, and the chances of being able to manage assets during anybody's disability are going to be much better, much more controllable with a revocable living trust than with a will and a power of attorney. On the other hand, if your assets are okay, but are going to go down because we have now the cost of caring for your husband, then we may want to look at a will with a power of attorney situation and try to provide what we would call a Medicaid will in your will, which says that if you die, the money you leave him goes into a little trust for him. But if he ever needs to qualify for Medicaid, then your assets won't be counted against him.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense? That help a little bit more?
Yeah, that's more of what I'm looking for as how I can take care of him
Right, right. And one of the key things that Brad mentioned up front is, you know, making sure that you get this planning done while your husband is still has the most capacity, the most ability to sign documents as possible. That's one of the ongoing issues that we see with folks that are suffering from any kind of disability that's mental in nature, in their inability to sign documents even when they really, really need to.
Right, and I've spoken to an attorney, and they're not sure if he is that is familiar with him, and he was thinking that he is not able to do that.
Well, the way we would normally approach it in our office would be, and we're very, I'd say very strict on this, is if there's a question of competence, then we have the family, go to his doctor and see if the doctor would be willing to sign a letter that said, in his opinion, your husband could understand a will, legal estate planning documents. If the doctor says yes, then we are comfortable that we can move forward. We're not the doctor, and we don't pretend to be the doctor. If the doctor says no, then frankly, I think you're kind of stuck perhaps with the current documents you have, and then we look at doing some more stuff for you again. So if something happens to you, then at least your assets. And there may be a back door. We may be able to jerry-rig some stuff that could be a big benefit. We don't know until we actually would have to look at the documents you currently have and what they say and how much jerry-rigging room we have.
Okay. Well, I think that we could – I didn't know we could go to the doctor. That sounds like – because the doctor is real familiar with him and, it's, you know, would know.
Yeah, I
right.
mean – go ahead, Doug. Were you going
to
say something?
Yeah, I mean, that's always my preference is to get the medical determination, get them to make that decision because, you know, we don't – as attorneys, we're not really as familiar with all of the medical situations that can change on a daily basis with a lot of folks. And so we're not going to be the one that wants to make that determination. And so, yeah, the doctor would be the place to go on that issue.
Yeah, and if there's ever going to be a question. And see, the other thing too, Deborah, is in Medicaid planning, there are criminal penalties.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to get into Medicaid fraud.
No.
So having a doctor who is much more highly trained than any or the vast majority of lawyers out there would be on competency issues, and again, he knows your husband and knows the situation. If there's ever a question, then the doctor can come in as the witness. We've got the doctor's letter there. It's just a much tighter, safer, smarter way to go.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you for the call.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we wish you well. All right, great.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's do this. We've got a call-in number. Our call-in number is 390-1370, 390-1370. We are down to the last about 15 minutes of the second-to-last show here in Law Talk with Brad. So if you've got questions about anything, and the two questions that came in were excellent questions, give us a call at 390-1370, 390-1370. We're going to take a break. We come back from break. We're going to talk to Doug more, and we're going to try to talk a little bit about some asset protection issues that are out there. There's been some changes there, too. And then we'll wrap up the second-to-last show. So our call-in number 390-1370, 390-1370. We will see you on the other side of the break. Thanks.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
We have an office in Austin at 1601 Rio Grande, which is near downtown, but not all the way downtown.
Suburban downtown.
Suburban downtown, Doug. Perfect. We have an office in Georgetown, suburban Sun City, right on Williams Drive at 1618 Williams Drive. We have our new Highland Lakes office out in Marble Falls area. We're actually in Horseshoe Bay, beautiful downtown Horseshoe Bay, at 6400 West Ranch Road, 2143. So we're out there, and we are happy to see you at any of our offices. The initial consultation at a law firm is free. Complimentary sounds a little bit nicer, but it's free. So you can come in, you can visit with us, you can kick our tires. You can have us review some planning that you've already done. You can start planning that you wanted to do but never have gotten around to doing. As long as you're vertical, we can help you. If you go horizontal on us, got a problem. We can help with all kinds of things, estate tax planning, family planning for you and your loved ones. We can talk about asset protection planning, which we're going to talk about here in a second. We can do special needs planning for families that have developmentally disabled children. We can help you with a probate or a trust administration. There's a lot of things we do. We have, again, three lawyers and three offices, and our website is texastrustlaw.com, texastrustlaw.com. Meetings at our office are by appointment only, so call us, and here's our office number. The primary office number in Austin is 480-8828, 480-8828, 480-8828. Call us. We're happy to schedule an appointment. We'll sit down and visit with you about what your options are, what you may want to do in the future, and what we can help you accomplish in the future. So we are the WeWell Law Firm. We are the peace of mind people. All we can give you is peace of mind, but we can give you a lot of that. Okay, Doug, speaking of peace of mind, asset protection planning. I did a little research this week, and I called the state bar to find out how many lawyers there are in Texas, and the number is 83,000.
A lot of lawyers.
A lot of lawyers, baby, and more coming.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got a few more graduating than dying.
And we got a lot of law schools in Texas. Yeah.
We have a lot of law schools. I think we have 7 or 8, and I think they're going to open a new one up in North Texas.
Yep, up in Dallas.
And then they're going to start another one. I think they're going to research the notion of starting another one in the Rio Grande Valley. So we are going to be a well-lawyered state.
All right.
All right. Now, that might put some of our clients at a little more risk of getting sued by one of those lawyers because there are a fair number of unemployed lawyers out there, too.
Right.
Or underemployed.
Right. And looking for business and things to do.
Things to do, mischief to make, Doug.
Okay.
And so if somebody gets sued, then we know that a lot of their assets may be at risk. Let me just start this conversation off with who should be concerned about asset protection planning.
Sure. It's a good question, Brad. I mean, generally, the way I look at it is, you know, folks that have accumulated assets are potentially targets for these type of situations, okay? So those, you know, and when we go in more specifically what I mean by accumulated assets, but people with wealth are going to be potentially a target for what some folks have called the lawsuit lottery, which I know you, that's a concept you're familiar with, Brad, and I'll let you talk a little bit about that. But, you know, so folks out there that have accumulated wealth, you know, maybe people that would have been interested in just our discussion about estate taxes, this is another issue to be aware of because there are potentially a lot of risks that can go along with that. So, you know,
the notion is that some people see winning a lawsuit as an alternative to the lottery.
Correct. Right. And so folks that, you know, clients of ours that have accumulated assets, you know, sometimes those are assets that create risks themselves, things like rental properties or lake houses or, you know, unimproved land. Yeah,
right.
Ranches, you know, those kind of things. All that type of stuff tends to increase your risk level because all of those kind of things, unlike, you know, a bank account of the same value, those type of things have risk associated with them because you have other people on that property.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you know about it, maybe you don't. It's a rental property. Maybe it's just your tenant, but more likely it's going to be your tenant and their tenant's friends and guests.
And there is a ball game this, I think, in town tonight. Is there a UT
there,
game?
I've heard something about that.
Nobody's
yes.
going to be drinking, I don't think, tonight.
No.
Nobody's going to get hurt probably tonight.
I seriously doubt it.
Yeah.
It's almost crazy to think of.
That's right. So, so people that own rental property, people that own lake houses, ranches, real estate.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that I've always been concerned about is the elderly driver.
Sure.
And I did a little Google search here before the show, and I've done this a number of times about if you go to Google News and kind of put in elderly and accident. Here I've got a couple of three stories here from the last 3 weeks, and one of them is a story out of California where an elderly man plowed his car into a farmer's market a couple years ago and killed 10 people.
Wow.
And then here's another story of an elderly gentleman, I guess, plowing into the same building, 83-year-old, it's a lady, excuse me, Louise Duffy, according to the story, plowed her car into the same storefront, the very same building she'd plowed into a couple of days before. It looks like Louise has an affinity.
Well, hopefully they didn't finish the repairs the first time.
Yeah, hopefully they didn't. But, you know, I mean, that's a concern of mine.
It is, and it's a legitimate concern. I shared with you that even in my own family, my grandmother did that. She drove her car into my uncle's house.
Mm.
And this is a woman that had driven all over the U.S. in her retirement. She was an RVer, and she thought it was the brake, hit the gas, and, you know, next thing you know, the truck is in the sink. And so that's the kind of thing that does happen. I mean, we saw it up in the Northeast. There was a gentleman drove into the Walmart, hit the baby carriage. Luckily, the baby was okay. Probably a lot of people saw that. That was all over the headline news.
Well, that's right. And I remember
just a couple months ago. A
couple years ago, elderly person, I think up in Mejia or Corsicana, I drove into a group of Cub Scouts.
Oh, yeah.
So
it happens.
What strategies can people put in place to minimize the risk of the loss of their assets? And in a lot of cases, these are irreplaceable assets.
Particularly for an elderly person.
Yep. Right. So what can they do with their
Sure. First point I always make when we talk about these things is we're not talking about doing things that prevent you from being sued, because there's no way to prevent you from being sued if you do one of these.
If you have an accident
of some kind. So it's not about that kind of thing, because anybody can sue you for those type of issues. It's more about, you know, structuring your assets so that they wouldn't be subject to the claims of creditors. You know, in Texas, we have a lot of exemptions. I know you've talked many times about the homestead exemption or other exemptions for retirement accounts and life insurance. Other techniques that we can use is to structure assets, put assets into entities or other structures that have themselves some lawsuit protection, so that if you own, for example, an interest in a limited liability company, which is often called an LLC, that's not subject to the claims of your creditors, that they cannot foreclose that. They can only get what's called a charging order. So it's not an exempt asset the way your homestead would be, but they can't foreclose and take those assets. So there's a lot of different structures like limited liability companies and limited partnerships that can be used to protect assets from potential creditors.
So someone can take their stock and bond account, maybe their CDs, their mutual funds, and put them in a limited liability company.
Right.
And if they get sued, if they plow into a school bus full of lawyers' children, Doug, the worst thing anybody can do.
Right.
You do that, your assets in that LLC would be more protected, of course, than they would be if you hadn't done that.
Correct. Correct. And you know, one of the things, the points we always make is to the clients that seek our advice about this is, you know, the first line of defense on these kind of issues is make sure you have yourself a umbrella liability insurance policy.
Smart. Right.
So that, you know, you have some way to try to make these folks whole and to give them something and not go after the assets that you plan on living on. So, you know, umbrella liability insurance is something you don't go to a lawyer for. You go to your insurance provider for your home, you know, home or auto insurance provider, to get that kind of a policy to protect your assets. Beyond that, then you want to look at structuring things that otherwise a person would want to take, like, you know, a stock account, like you mentioned, investment account. You know, putting that into a structure that's going to be protected from a lawsuit so that the plaintiff is going to be more likely to accept that insurance, you know, that you have sitting out there, that umbrella policy, and move on down the road and not try to go after your nest egg that you need for your lifetime.
Or that family ranch or that lake house.
Right, or whatever it may be, you know, whatever assets you're trying to structure to keep safe.
All right, well, this show has gone fast, Doug, and unfortunately we're out of time.
Wow. Well, it's my last time on to say how much I've always enjoyed coming on, taking people's phone calls, and the times we've got to be on together. It's been a great experience.
Well, thanks, Doug. You did a great job, and you took it a lot of times when I couldn't take it, so we appreciate that, too. Okay, this is the second to last show next week. I'm on with Candace Bocock. You've got questions, write them down. We'll take them next week, and then that's it, unless you want to call the We Will Law Firm and set an appointment. We're happy to see you there, too. Today is Saturday. Tomorrow is Sunday. You need to get your little bottom out of bed and go to church. I think you can – a lot of things to pray for. Certainly pray for our country and throw one in for us, too. We will see you next week on Law Talk with Brad. This is Brad. We will have a great weekend.
Tune in next week for another edition of Law Talk with Brad.